ride without a head. A wolf without a
head. That is how I feel, as I feel like the song Dragon the River, in the sense that if one thing worse than this happens to me, I may kill myself. I'm also sick as well. That's why I sound like this.
If you're listening to this, don't get mad at November. Don't be snarky with her.
No, I mean, that's basically true all the time. Yeah. Ideally, that's a disclaimer we put out before every episode. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Doing the Tracy Jordan, don't make me show you the back of my hand, where it has written, please be nice to me.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is, like, this is most common. I most commonly get the criticism of being, like, confidently wrong about stuff. Only because, like, if you present stuff unconfidently, it's a bad podcast, right? But, like, I get that criticism a lot through, well, there's your problem. And it's like, I wonder why this podcast with its audience of, like, engineering fans might be a little bit pedantic, you know?
Yeah, as opposed to our audience of what I can only assume are local politics freaks who are obsessive but pleasant.
Yeah, they're all wearing the big foam finger that says local government. Yes, yeah, that's the banner we put up at the live show.
Okay, the live show is getting more and more just appealing to me as a concept every time we talk about it, from like the possibility of having a house band to a banner drop to, I'm not even going to say anything else.
To that one bit that
we talked
about.
Coming out fully nude wearing only sashes.
To applying the gel, of course. Also, we probably have to sync up our recordings at some point.
Oh, yeah. Hey, we won't have to do that at the live show.
I think that's should.
True. We should do it anyway.
Do the clap. Okay, well, let's practice for the live show. And I'm going to say 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
You might wonder, am I going to do that every time? And the answer is yes, from now on, because I like Cowboy Bebop. Hello, everybody. Welcome to No Gods, No Mayors. That was a little bit of preamble. That's like, hey.
It's a good show. Although I feel like the most infuriating opinion I could derive from Riley is like an earnest belief that he likes Cowboy Bebop, is not aware of the existence of the original, referring solely to the Netflix live action.
So I spent a lot of money on eBay in the early 2000s buying Hong Kong rips of anime series that to have them delivered to my house.
That's why they call you Cowboy Bebop.
I had the most illegal copy of Neon Genesis Evangelion in Canada.
Okay, you can't just keep saying, okay, sorry, I'm just, you can't
the most
do
transsexual
this anymore.
Sentences
say, oh,
I've ever
God
heard in my life.
Fucking, you had illegal Evas? You fuck!
I didn't know that was a trans thing to do.
No,
you're not meant to yet, but now you are. By now you are.
Sorry, my wife is out of the house, which means I'm going to be doing a lot of screaming on this episode. Riley! You motherfucker! I'm so far away from my microphone right now! And I'm so mad at you!
It's so funny that this elicited a much bigger reaction than when I told you both I lived in the lesbian party house.
Well, yeah, well, because this is the last straw. This is the last.
That's a separate issue. We'll get to that. We will get to that.
We'll get to your 1/4 FFS that you got. Well,
look.
It says I know multiple people who have transitioned after knowingly or unknowingly, sometimes years long campaigns of it's so funny, what a coincidence it is that I'm the only cis boy who's like this, right? And I just want to say, at this point, if you actually do that, I will be mad. Genuinely, I will be, like, angry. I will not be supportive of your transition because I have tried.
You basically think, I now need to be the, let's call it the quisis Haderach, who is able to look inwardly.
You need to be like imprisoned for your crimes in a kind of ironic fashion where you get stuck in the soft launch forever.
Just like what, going around being like, hey, my hair's a little longer. Ooh, I wonder why. Yeah.
You have to go. I'm sentencing you to once a day going into a Starbucks and trying out a different name.
Just trying it on for. Hey, Charlie. Just trying it, yeah. Hey. I'm gonna segue into the item mix up. The item mix 'em up. The item dance.
The municipal roundup.
Yes. No, because
I hear that if you go into a Starbucks and you ask them to say the name municipal roundup, they're not allowed to do it because of woke.
They wrote loser on my cup. Yeah.
Yeah. Rudy Giuliani has now proudly proclaimed that if you say you must write municipal roundup on your Starbucks cup, they have to do it. And also, if you write, haha, sucker, you lost Lauren Bacall's Mercedes, then it's a legal kill. They're allowed to kill you. This is the item rodeo, a municipal roundup.
Le cirque des actualités. Yeah.
This is a free episode. We have to behave normal.
Okay, you're telling... Who just spent like several minutes yelling?
I believe that was you.
Oh, it's me? As I did that?
Yeah,
it was... I thought I was sipping on a little...
I don't think Maddie's going to know that she did that on account of she was, I think, arguably dissociating the whole time.
I mean, I don't doubt you. It's just I thought that what I was doing was sipping on this really nice Pinot Grigio or Grauburgunder, excuse me.
The thing is that, Riley, you sometimes say things that are so infuriating to trans people or trans women specifically that we enter third person mode. So it's like, yeah, I'm still performing all of the same actions, but my camera position is like now behind my own head.
Like my autonomous nervous system is still functioning correctly, but the rest of me is not here.
I had no idea that illegal anime rips was a thing. I'm sorry.
It's not just illegal anime rips, Riley. It's illegal Evangelion. You understand? Do you understand?
I also the show about becoming transgender.
Do you understand, Riley? Do you understand, Riley?
My God. I also had Trigun.
Okay, that's fine.
That doesn't count.
That's fine. That's fine. No. That's fine.
Look, it's just here's the other thing.
Riley Quinn, the cisgender man who's letterboxed top four, People's Joker, the fucking the other one, the There Is Still Time
yeah,
one,
I saw the
and
TV
Castration
glow.
Movie
I saw the
parts TV one and two. Yeah, you remember it.
Yeah, of course. Okay, well, I like the cinematography, okay?
There is still time to do municipal roundup.
Yeah, there's still time to do municipal roundup because I was thinking, we've been doing a lot of episodes where we're like, the mayor is so big that we don't have time for municipal roundup. Or we've been just doing like the New York Minute or London, Kentucky. And I want to go back to a tradition of doing municipal roundups that we get in the Blue Sky inbox. And I have one that's really fun. This is...
Hit it. Punch it.
About a mayor named Vincent Van Quickenborn. I'll let that sink in.
Okay, sorry, perfect. One more time? Yeah, is he running a kind of like barge syndicate? Does he sell me tulips?
He is from the Low Countries. Vincent Van Quickenborn, that's the name again, is the mayor of Kortrijk in Flemish Belgium.
He invented Quicken. Like you almost said Flemish Belgium, which is very Dune coded. You know, like hearing the... I mean, in that case, it's more like... It is water power. It's like polder power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm putting on my Belgian still suit, which is a joke that's TBD while I think about some stuff about
who
Belgians.
Who taught you to wear your clogs Flemish fashion?
Seemed the natural way.
Yeah. No. Your 12% beer. Your 12% beer is better stored in your body than your still suit. Basically, this guy, Vincent Van Quickenborn, he was actually in the news a few months ago. He bounces back.
He was there walking without rhythm, is what I saw.
he was there just sloshing around sludgy farmland.
The heredity of that surname implies a kind of like historical Dutch child being fired out of its mother at like sufficient velocity to rename an entire family.
Oh, well, that was quick.
The Quickenborns are only gestated for 6 months.
Yeah. And you have to put the bassinet across the room. We're doing it real Swedish for our Belgian impression. Look,
I don't have a Belgian impression.
Let me tell you about Vincent Van Quickenborn, please.
I was telling you about him, but okay. Uh-huh.
Please.
Vincent Van Quickenborn, he's like elected mayor of Kortrijk, in like 2013, but he bounces back and forth between national and local positions because he's also like a bigwig in like the sort of liberal party of Belgium. And he leaves Kortrijk for good in 2022 to become justice minister. As justice minister, Van Quickenborn was also the face of Belgium's fight against organized crime. And there was a plot to kidnap him in 2022 where a bunch of guys like just were arrested outside of his house with a truck full of like AKs and zip ties and Molotov cocktails and stuff.
Cool.
Now,
I mean, listen, I don't like to kink shame. Also, I really like the idea of like these hoods have met their match in Quickenborn.
We got to take out Quickenborn. It's like you're watching Gamora, but instead of like terrifying Gamora guys, it's just a bunch of bouncy Belgians. So as justice minister, basically that's what he was doing. And the thing is, that's not the focus of this story, because he didn't get kidnapped and the guys were arrested, but then actually wasn't enough evidence. Doesn't matter. He's been fine about that since. However, as a result of that, he's had increased police protection. Cares?
That's a minor biographical detail. It's like, you almost got kidnapped. I've been almost kidnapped. Who cares, right? Yeah, like,
exactly. So the only thing we need to know about that is, as a result, he had increased police protections for like the foreseeable future.
Okay.
This resulted in a scandal in Belgium that was called PP Gate.
They're putting like you on the Quickenborn detail.
All right. I'm afraid Quickenborn has succumbed to Peepee Gate. Or at his 50th birthday, three of his friends left his house and peed on an empty police van. And then he came out and then he was like dancing beside them and laughing and miming peeing also.
This is just to me. This is European culture.
You ever just do a great piss bit with your friends? Yeah.
This is European culture to me. This is what I assume they are doing. Like I've seen in Amsterdam, they got those urinals on the side of the canals that guys are just pissing on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And I just assume that this is just sort of a natural thing to be doing in the Low Countries, is you're just peeing on stuff with the
very,
boys.
Very kind of piss focused set of countries by all means. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Look, when you have that much like flowing water, like everyone's going to piss all the time. So Belgian media reported citing
inverse dune.
Yeah, this is why you need the still suit to recycle my piss.
This is what Caladan would have been like. No, that's what it is. Caladan is the Belgium of the Dune fictive universe.
Oh, that's cursed.
So some Belgian media reports saying other footage.
Paul, move your waffles across the room.
Make me give them to you.
Use the voice.
This is the voice. It's that. Put on the Swedish accent, Paul. Mother, give me the wall.
None of us have a Belgian accent or a Dutch one.
Hold on, let me lock in. Mother, give me the water.
She's gonna do the voice.
Yeah, that's good. The voice. I just did the voice. Dog. You both have to give me the water.
Okay, the water. Well, I'm giving you the water of life, which is piss.
I've been killed. Anyway. All right, so basically, they're like, hey, these guys pissed in a police van, and you went out and like did a little like mimed peeing beside them. And then he was like, no, I wasn't miming peeing beside them. And then there's a video of him that gets released miming peeing beside them. And then he said, I wasn't doing that. I was playing unrelated air guitar.
This Quickenboom guy, I'm coming to like him. I've got to be honest. This is like if your country's Elliot Ness got embroiled in a kind of like piss scandal.
Yeah, not even a bad piss scandal. Not like a kind of like trussed up in leather, like a Tory MP piss scandal. Like, no, just like a public urination scandal.
He wasn't even doing it.
Yeah, he was just having fun with it. Well, his boys were doing it. So as for whether he was mimicking someone urinating, Mr. Van Quickenborn, widely known as Quickie in Belgium, said he was in fact performing an unrelated air guitar solo.
Come on.
I hate to admit it. He is quoted in the Flemish newspaper Het Nieuwsblad. It's a fake language. As telling the Justice Committee of the Belgian Parliament on Thursday, I specialize in air guitar. I am a metalhead.
That checks out.
Dude's rock.
Yeah, this is great. I love him.
I specialize in air guitar is maybe one of my favorite sentences. That's a beautiful verb to use with that activity. I'm not just an air guitar guy. I'm a specialist.
Yeah. It's like, no, it's like that's the rank that you enlist in if you're going to be an air guitar instead of front-facing combat.
Yeah, the thing about air guitar is that it's kind of run by like an E4 mafia, you know?
So, okay. Anyway, so basically...
Going to air guitar officer school?
So on Monday, the 4th of September, 2023, the Flemish public broadcaster...
What, air guitar Sandhurst?
VRT cast doubt... A lot more pissing at air guitar Sandhurst, weirdly. Cast doubt on his version. The next day, the minister decided to show another channel from his own footage, where he can be seen visibly tipsy as he walks to his last guest to the door at 4 in the morning. In the footage, the minister is seen leaning back as if to mimic the gesture of someone urinating next to his friend, who finds it hilarious. He also addressed the seriousness of the issue, telling Parliament, quote, I am ashamed that people I invited to my house peed on a police van. It is disgusting, especially considering why the van is there for my protection. Belgian Prime Minister Alexander De Croo was at the birthday party, but says he didn't see anything.
Is it illegal to be a good hang and have a fun time with your friends, Your Honor?
Yeah. Is it illegal to pee in the same way that Ferris Bueller would have if he were in that situation? I ask
Ferris
you.
Ferris Bueller was a Belgian mayor.
You're assigned to stop this guy from getting like cut to pieces in a shipping container, right? And you are then trapped in a kind of pranky relationship, like an Animal House. You're in a National Lampoon style relationship with your protectee. It's beautiful.
So the end result was that Van Quickenborn was not faced prosecution because just like having a little dance next to someone peeing on something is not a crime. And the two men involved, they need to each pay 1,200...
Yeah, we've all went to Berkheim.
Yeah, 1,250 euros. It actually is true. 1,250 euros and a moral compensation of 1 euro each to the affected police officers in addition to paying to have the van cleaned.
That's literally spending a penny. Like, yeah.
Well, with inflation, how it is. Oh, my.
Yeah. I have to go out and spend the euro.
To go out and spend a euro on moral damages.
Again. I keep getting Swedish with it. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to put out a public call. If you are a listener to this podcast, can you please give us all Low Countries voice training? Thank you.
Yeah. If you're really upset. Well,
I had a girl try to teach me Dutch once. Yeah. And that was memorable. So yeah, maybe.
I grew up, a friend of mine growing up lived down the street from me. His mother was from Belgium and she was a lovely woman and she made chocolates in the basement. And I'm not joking. And she had a very thick Belgian accent and I cannot for the life of me right now remember how she sounded. So I'm sorry.
It's close enough to English that it just slips out of your brain.
Right. Yeah. Well, Dutch is easy because hello is just hello.
It's the same in German, really. But yeah, it's time to leave Municipal Roundup. I miss Municipal Roundups like this, where it's just a nice self-contained story of one funny guy. Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
Monster of the week.
All right, let's end this with our best Belgian accented hya.
Okay. Okay. On three.
One, two, three.
Hya.
So basically, November's Hia in Belgian is like she's got a terrible stomach virus. It's a very Eeyore-ish Hia. They're an Eeyore-ish people, the Belgians.
So make me sound like a kind of horse. Yeah.
Okay.
I panicked in the moment. I was overwhelmed.
Do you two want to hear about Mayor of Toronto, Mel Lastman?
I would love to.
Someone I have been excited to talk to both of you about now for, I would say, 2 weeks.
Please tell me about why the last Melman.
Thank you. You've been enjoying that.
I have.
So you should see the story of Mel Lastman, who was mayor of Toronto from 1998 to 2003, but mayor of North York for a very long time before that, as a kind of prequel to Rob Ford, a bit of Rob Ford's Phantom Menace. For a lot of personal color, by the way, I will be quoting from his obituary throughout the episode. So, Melvin Lastman, was born to a family of Polish-Jewish immigrants in Toronto in 1933. His parents were, like, sort of well-to-do, but lost all of their savings in the Great Depression. His father was sold newspapers. He worked in a hat-making factory.
He was a Trotskyist.
Yeah, well, he was a union steward in the hat-making factory selling newspapers.
Well, shit, so he might have been.
Yeah, goddamn, maybe.
Dad, stop trying to sell me copies of the Morning Star. I don't care. Also, I live with you.
Stop telling me about the permanent brim. I don't want to hear about it.
So, he, basically, Mel was
permanent prone fuck up.
Mel was a salesman from the beginning. He used to sit on the sidewalk and sell, quote, pickles for a nickel, which was fun. So
sure,
it's only fun because it rhymes. Otherwise, you're just buying a pickle from a small child.
Yeah, if it was a pickle like, for a dime,
loose,
that's like
a loose single pickle as well.
Yeah, I'm selling pickles for a nickel, but that's because I have low self-esteem, and that's what I'm calling myself.
The only thing you should be selling like loose individually like that is like, I don't know, like hot dogs or cigarettes. Like, don't sell me a pickle. This is embarrassing.
Yeah. Lucy's.
Lucy pickle. So he went to high school nearby in Toronto's Kensington Market, which is like central Toronto. It's now Chinatown. It used to be a sort of more Jewish area. And he met his girlfriend, a woman called Marilyn Bronstein, later Lastman, who is basically in charge of his career sort of the whole time.
We love this. We love a guy being piloted by his wife.
Yes. So basically, she got a job in an appliance store in Toronto and said, hey, can you hire my boyfriend for the back room? And the owner said, okay, I won't hire couples. She was like, okay, well, I'll quit. And then Lastman, my beautiful boyfriend, Melvin, he can work in the back room.
Please hire my beautiful Melvin. I will quit so you can hire my beautiful Melvin.
I will make space so Melvin may thrive. And the thing is, that was kind of a good move because Mel was amazing at furniture sales. He took the place of a salesman.
It's really important to like hold space for the Melvins in your life.
He's doing progressive stack, Melvins first.
Melvins to the front. So they married when she was 18, he was 20. And he very soon after created a furniture shop of his own that would become a store called Bad Boy. That if you're from Ontario, I've just triggered.
Sorry.
Yep. Uh-huh. You're sorry?
There's a furniture store called Bad Boy. Uh-huh. But why?
Oh, I'm looking at a photo of a storefront and I would love to describe what it looks like to people.
Can I get us to the Bad Boy? There is a Bad Boy segment. I'm going to get us there.
Please get us
I'm
to the
Bad Boy.
I consider item roundup the Bad Boy segment, but go off.
So I thought the Bad Boy segment was when I said, yeah, I used to buy pirated Evangelion DVDs when I was 13.
It's like, bad boy.
That's a bad girl segment. Bad girl segment.
Oh, okay.
Girl segment.
So anyway, he sets this furniture shop up. It goes through a few names. It becomes like the Bad Boy appliance empire. I will explain Bad Boy.
Yeah, it's actually a merger of the bad furniture store, which weirdly did not go well, and the Boy furniture store, which had a much stranger clientele. And he merged those two failing chains to create something that was greater than the sum of its parts.
So this is a Marilyn. Marilyn said in 1988 Toronto Life profile, Mel fails miserably at marriage, but I like him. He tries.
Huh. I'm number two, but I try harder.
The couple had two children, Dale, who became a lawyer, who we'll never hear from again, and Blaine, a businessman who would go on to take Bad Boy over from Mel.
Sorry, Blaine with a Y.
Yeah, Blaine with a Y.
Blaine with a Y.
Yeah, Blaine with a Y.
I think that's so important.
I feel like Massey and I are kind of like, I'm not sure how it is with the lag, but I keep saying things more or less simultaneously with her.
We're in the drift.
Yeah, we are. We absolutely are.
So basically, he's got this huge penchant for publicity stunts for promoting his furniture store, which he basically sticks to for his whole career.
Well, it's not called Good Boy Furniture, right? So, like, of course they're going to try and get your attention.
So it's like, yeah, he's just acting out to get attention. But basically, my favorite type of commercial, or one of my favorite types of commercials, is where the proprietor of a store or shop is, like, committed to a mental health institution because he's priced the products too low. In this case, the conceit is that Mel and later his son Blaine have been arrested and put in jail. They're dressed up in striped jail outfits because the prices are, quote, a steal. And they love to do ads, you know, around that. I love that, like, I've priced the products too low. There must be something wrong with me.
Yeah, like, as a proponent of Crazy Eddie's here in New York.
Yeah.
The classic of the genre. But, so this doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
So the prices are a steal.
Yeah.
So the owner's in jail?
Yeah, that trial's collapsing instantly.
He should be dressed up like a cop.
Yeah, that's true.
Look, it's like there should be a police officer at the door of Bad Boy, where if you walk in, they're like, another one. Take him away, boys.
This is making a fuss out of the Canadian justice system.
So In 1963, Mel Lastman dresses in a jailhouse uniform for the first time, offering people at Queen and Yonge Streets a $2 bill in exchange for a $1 bill.
Hey, they're selling $2 for a dollar.
Yeah, promotionally. Yeah, he sold $2 for a dollar. We used to have $2 bills in Canada. They got phased out when I was like 9.
For the famous toonie?
For the famous toonie, a bimetallic coin.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, it was a big deal. So, the Toronto Star...
We used to have $2 bills in America, too.
Yeah. You didn't get a toonie, though.
I know, I used to collect them because I thought they were fun.
You collected upwards of $12.
That's the kind of child I was.
So, the corner where Lastman was giving away $2 for $1 got so busy that the police shut it down in like 15 minutes. In 54, Mel Lastman also follows an ice truck around, noting their delivery stops and before he pitches them on buying a refrigerator. He was also arrested during a publicity stunt in Times Square where he again would sell $2 Canadian for $1 American, but he was actually arrested, not just moved on.
That's actually a deal in his favor. That's not like...
Depends on the year. And finally, in another one of his publicity stunts, probably the most racist one.
Oh.
Lastman okay. flew... Yeah, sorry. Lastman flew to Nunavut to quote, and I'm quoting the exact quote that he says here.
Oh no, I know what he's going to do. No!
Yep.
No!
Yep. Yep. I'm sorry. He is... And I quote that. I'm quoting him here. Sell a refrigerator to an Eskimo.
Put him in the actual jail, please.
Well he is dead. Do you want to dig up his bones?
Justified NYPD arrest, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
The coffin is the some call it the last jail.
Yeah, you always end up in prison. The coffin That's prison. Right. Take him to
this
coffin,
is like
boy.
Some wisdom you would hear from like the aged con in the yard. Like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. I tell you what, kid, there's one jail waiting for all of us.
It was getting a little bit Trump there. It was getting a little bit like, and that's where I hope Trump ends his days, is like being the like old convict dispensing wisdom.
You know, a lot of people call it the last jail. They're saying there's one last jail waiting for all of us, kiddo.
Very difficult to break out of.
I think that my experience of the last jail is going to be like Goodfellas. I'm going to make pasta with Ray Liotta, and it's going to be pretty good. All right. I have two YouTube videos for you both to watch now. If you'll scroll to the notes.
Okay.
Sure.
These will certainly kill my internet, but I will do my best.
Well, I'm watching an ad now.
Oh, I have premium, so... Yeah,
I'm watching an ad for something horrible.
I mean, I have premium, but it hasn't loaded yet because I have bad internet.
Okay, well, I'll just describe the ad.
Okay, so I got... It's a fake Bill and Hillary.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh, no.
The flags around the border are something else.
Yeah, pretty good, right?
This is...
They're like sort of like, there's like
I'm so distracted by these.
Is that him?
No, that's his son, Blaine, who took over Bad Boy because Mel sold it in the 70s. It went bankrupt.
Blaine with a Y.
And then Blaine with a Y bought it again in 1991. But then Mel would always come on to say the catchphrase of Bad Boy, which is, nobody.
Yeah. Ooh, the second one here seems to be Macho Man Randy Savage.
Blaine is a husky lad. He's a hearty boy. That's a large man. That's a large son, a large adult son.
Yeah.
He says, I love, when I crush prices, there is no competition. One of my favorite types of like huckster local ad. I love it.
Yeah, this is really beautiful. The WWF at Maple Leaf Gardens with Macho Man Randy Savage. Okay. Also, just can I talk about the stripy uniform he's wearing?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's a hoodie.
It's like a hoodie
with no hood. It looks like a hoodie. It's got strings. He's wearing a red t-shirt under it.
Uh-huh.
It's not a prison uniform. He looks like he's going to a Fall Out Boy show in 2005.
Well, maybe Canadian prison has a very emo aesthetic.
They said it's a maximum security in emo Ontario. Yeah. It's,
instead of getting your hair cut when you get to prison, they just give you like a flat iron fringe.
They're giving you the emo hair at the prison.
Instead of
barber.
Getting a prison tattoo, I get prison snake bites.
Yeah, I'm getting a prison tattoo, but it's like the nautical star.
Seeing a guy wearing like skinny jeans that are ripped at the knees and just crossing the street because you're like, I'm pretty certain that guy's been in prison.
No, it's if you have skinny jeans ripped at the knees, that's like a Russian gangster with stars on his knees in Canada. It's considered to be very intimidating. So anyway, after they did the Bill and Hillary commercial, the White House actually sent a cease and desist letter to Blaine and Mel Lastman. And he responded just by making more Bill Hillary commercials.
I mean, incredible. They don't have any, like, I'm pretty certain there's some, like, international treaty obligations that would have to change before any Canadian gave a shit about that. And this is why Mark Carney is justified in driving a technical up to the border, you know?
Just shooting wildly into the air. So
yeah, it's like the American president doesn't like your fucking bad boy furniture commercial. I don't give a shit. Different country.
Yeah, your authority does not extend into the great southern erg of Canada rackets. So they're also very flamboyant as a family. Mrs. Lastman, so Marilyn, used to quip, quote, "There's no room in my closet for skeletons," regarding her fashion and jewelry collection. The bar mitzvah thrown for their elder son, Dale, had 650 guests at the Royal York Hotel, which is kind of like the New York Palace, that garnered mention the next day for its in the papers for its extravagance. The theme of the night was simply, "My son, the king."
This is the second mayoral bar mitzvah we've spoken about on this show, and it has considerably stranger vibes than the first one, which was the mob lawyer bar mitzvah from Oscar Goodman.
Yeah. So, how come you guys keep covering Jews and I haven't covered one yet? I just
It's fucked up.
Chance. Yeah. So it's unclear what Blaine's bar mitzvah theme was. That's not known. However,
that's brutal. That makes me feel so sad, actually, to be like, here's my one son. He's a lawyer. My like bar mitzvah theme for him is like he's on a throne. He's got a little crown. Here's my other son. He gets to be in my commercials and he's going to manage my furniture stores. And let's not worry about his bar mitzvah theme. You know, justice for Blaine at this point.
It's like Blaine, they just give the kiddish lunch after services on Shabbat morning. And it's like Broadway, and there's like one table with a playbill on it, and that's all they gave him.
It's the thing is Blaine. It actually is quite like your son, the king, in the sense that it is quite aristocratic. It is quite feudal in the sense that you're like, all right, here's my first son who will, rule, and here's my second son who will, rule the trivial stuff and be the kind of big idiot and is a spare in case the first one dies in like a crossbow accident or something.
Yeah. Sending your son to run bad boy furniture is the 20th century equivalent of sending him to the monastery.
Yeah. Or like it's being like okay, dukedom. You can be a count in Umbria, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess. Exactly. Be the count of Umbria. It doesn't mean anything. So this is also from his obituary. Though he was often called a flamboyant showman, with his penchant for obvious hair plugs, Rolls Royces, and diamond jewelry, he was actually a shy man who was uncomfortable in large public gatherings. He was overshadowed by his glamorous wife, Marilyn, who was fond of large jewels and glitzy parties, as she was of the husband she publicly called that little schnook.
I think these two are kind of adorable.
It's so awesome to be married to a mean lady.
Oh, yeah.
I like this.
Absolutely.
Terrifying woman and a, like, pretty normal man.
Oh, okay. Let me disabuse you of that notion. Just a moment. So now we're going to talk a little bit about Lastman, the mayor. So Toronto has not always been the greater Toronto area. It was a bunch of cities that included Old Toronto, North York, East York, Scarborough, Etobicoke, and so on and so on. York also. So Mel Lastman is elected to the North York Board of Control in 1969. When elected, he famously said to the press, "What does a controller do?" Which is, classic. But the thing is, he was really beloved. He would serve 10 straight terms, 25 years, as the mayor of North York before it became part of Toronto. This is from the North York Historical Society. He was easily accessible to North Yorkers, unlike his predecessors. He was reported to have instructed that anyone calling City Hall should always be greeted by a real voice, not voicemail. Voicemail is an evil invention because it encouraged employees to pick and choose what calls they return, and he always kept his phone number listed. What is it with Toronto mayors and giving out their personal phone numbers? They love it.
It's just, like, I need to talk to people on the phone because I feel very lonely. I do like, actually, that there's a bit that...
because my wife just bullies me.
He does specify real voice in office hours, so he's not a monster, right? You're not having the phones kind of, like, staffed 24/7, which I appreciate.
Yeah. So, He was an absolute booster of North York. He was like, do business in North York, come to North York, and so on and so on. He said it's Canada's like fourth largest municipality. He got Ontario to charter a city in 1979, because even though it was like a sort of metro area, not a city. He called North York the city with heart, and he subbed at a public celebration of North York on Valentine's Day, every Valentine's Day, including giving up marriage licenses for free and serving a giant heart-shaped cake to the citizens.
Hey, this guy's giving out free very whimsical Canadian marriage licenses.
Yeah, look, they're worth half a U.S. marriage license.
Well, they actually changed that out to be like a bimetallic marriage license now.
So he did a number of real things. He campaigned quite tirelessly for a subway line to connect off of a street intersection called Yonge and Sheppard in North York. And if you imagine the Toronto subway system, right? It's a very thin U with a big line through it.
Oh, I'll do this easily. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not much of a subway system. The U with the line through it, on the top right of the U, there's like a little beep. There's like a little hyphen.
Okay.
Which is called the Sheppard line. It's a four-stop nubbin off the top of the Yonge line. It has only 5 stations, and it's one of the least used transit lines in North America.
I have a question. Did you just describe it as simultaneously a four-stop nubbin that has 5 stations?
Which
is it, Quinn?
There's the station that it starts at. This is the classic fence problem in math.
Yeah. Okay, so sorry, it has it's a 5-stop nubbin. It's one of the least used transit lines in North America. It could be expanded upon to become more useful, and there are like plans to expand it, but like 50,000 people use it on an average weekday in total. In total.
That's not very much.
We keep covering mayors that get transit built, but none of it is useful. It's like the fucking the tram in London that Boris built, or the monorail that we talked about in Portugal that goes like 2 stops.
1 stop, actually. To a mall.
Sorry, you're right.
It's the Mall Express. So, anybody oversaw like lots of development and investment while keeping taxes
not to do the fence post thing, right? But like, am I seriously discovering, Riley, that you have a like ground floor, first floor thing where if a line has 2 stops, you say that it has 1 because it's got to start somewhere and that doesn't count as a stop?
No, unfortunately, I simply misspoke. I'm sorry. I wish I could say there was something funny with my brain, but no. I just simply misspoke. So I also oversaw lots of development investment, keeping taxes low, which basically the only way you can do that is by being completely in bed with the real estate industry, right? Which he was. Mm,
of course. Of course.
In a bed that he sold for such a low price.
Yeah. He went to jail, actually, because he,
he must have stolen real estate developers.
Yeah, but he was even like... Even his critics were like, look, we don't like how he's doing it, but he has made North York not really such a backwater. So there are 6 regions, Old Toronto, York, East York, North York, Scarborough, Etobicoke, that are then by the province in the 1990s. They're going to get amalgamated into a mega city, and fucking nobody wanted it at all. No one in Old Toronto, no one in the metro areas. 76% of voters rejected it, including in North York. But the conservative provincial government was like, fuck you. You're going to be amalgamated.
Canadian Shenzhen.
we were going to be Canadian Shenzhen. At a recent anti-amalgamation rally, he waved around the province's map of the new municipal boundaries and said, you don't find North York anywhere on this map. North York will be gone. They're carving us up like a turkey and it isn't even Thanksgiving. Lastman then chanted as he announced the results. No, like crossing his fingers, like no, big money, no whammies. He was like, no mega city.
Wait, you're carving us up like a turkey. By combining us into one big thing?
Yeah, like how you combine a turkey.
You're amalgamating us like a chicken nugget.
Yeah, that's the analogy.
Imprecise metaphor.
You've turned North York into...
So, Lastman becomes mayor of Amalgamated Toronto, because basically there's like, okay, well, there's no one who's mayor of Amalgamated Toronto.
They should keep calling it Amalgamated Toronto the whole time. Like, you should, that should be the name of the city, and you have to say the whole thing like A Tribe Called Quest.
Yeah, yeah, it's Amalgamated Toronto is like the setting for the worst cyberpunk novel ever written. The corpos are onto us, eh?
Neo-Tokyo and Amalgamated Toronto.
Only 2 cities are left in the post-nuclear wasteland.
Amalgamated Toronto is about to explode. Yeah, I...
Oh, God.
Good for health, bad for education.
So he ran this really flashy, gaffe-prone campaign. Only the Sun, which is owned by the same people that own the British Sun or the New York Post, supported him. But he was constantly getting media attention in the news. And he was running against a woman called Barbara Hall, by all accounts, a sort of left-leaning technocrat liberal. It was just very serious about being the mayor, it was not fun. Like, she wasn't wacky at all. She was the opposite of Mel Lastman completely. All she wanted to do was, like, work with other mayors.
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Which message will resonate with voters? And the two messages are, like, quite an elaborate and technical program to improve people's lives in a reasonable way. And I must be crazy to sell a sofa for this little. And that's why they put me in here. It's like, genuinely, I get the sense that Barbara Hall is the kind of politician that Keir Starmer imagines himself to
be. Oh, absolutely.
Right. Mm.
Yeah.
Wait, I have a question, because I feel like I can intuit it from the kind of guy that he is.
Uh-huh.
But Mel Lastman's like actual politics.
Uh-huh.
He's like, he's a conservative.
Yeah, he's a conservative. He's a tax slashing. Okay, he's a tax slashing conservative. But he's not like a social conservative quite as much. Like he's more like a median voter. He's just has a bunch of random stuff.
Yeah, he's not a social conservative because his life was changed when he went to prison for selling a chair for too little.
Yeah, he's a prison abolitionist. I should be able to price my chairs how I want without being criminalized. Full decrim now.
Yeah, it turns out that those commercials are actually like pretty like emotionally searing depictions of the like violence and trauma that prison causes.
Yeah, I'm for the Nordic model, which is when they build an IKEA.
Can I get a clip of a really clean clip of Maddie saying I'm for the Nordic model?
No, I don't. Okay. I want, so here's the thing, is I'm for the Nordic model, comma, it's when they build an IKEA, is a really funny joke that's very good. Unfortunately, I don't believe.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good bit. We should keep it in.
That's fine to keep in. Yeah. I'm not for the Nordic model in real life. Uh-huh. I'm presupposing a thing for a setup for a joke on my comedy podcast.
Uh-huh. About furniture stores.
Are you just saying to me that is comedy?
I'll never do that because that's how you get in real trouble.
Yodo.
Is comedy illegal now?
Yeah. Hey.
I mean, besides the answer being yes.
Like, let's stick to the facts, huh? Let's stick to the facts on this show. So, he runs, basically it's like the kind of wacky salesman, like the human wild, wacky, inflatable arm flailing tube man versus Barbara Hall, the quite serious technocrat.
Okay. And I'm assuming this is the end of the episode and she won.
Yep. Bye, Mel. No, right. So
the Patreon is nogodsnomayors.com. Thank you for listening.
So the thing
you're still going.
Mel cannot stop saying crazy shit during the campaign. So for example, he's like, look, if I'm faced between shoveling every driveway or helping feed hungry children, I won't have to think very long about my decision, said Hall during a debate with Lastman, meaning I'm going to feed hungry children. Mayor Hall, there's a big difference between us. You can't wait to spend taxpayers' money and I can't wait to save it. You know, so it's like
God, he talks in furniture ads.
He talks in ads. Another thing Hall said on Hall about a writer and commentator at the time, she's not especially gifted in the art of twisting arms. She's proven herself to be an effective promoter, a reasonable consensus builder, and a politician with a substantial understanding of the relationship between cities and local governments.
Oh, God. I know in my heart this is going to be like bath party margins.
Yeah, so... Hall says, I'd like to lead a city where more, because she was the mayor of Old Toronto, which is very liberal, right? It's like, I'll go on though. She says, I'd like to lead a city where more people take the time to pick up a piece of garbage and fewer people run red lights. A city where we see our neighbors as reflections of ourselves, as false hopes and virtues not unlike our own. I'd like to lead a city that shines out to the world, not as a glittering neon sign, but as a beacon of compassion, tolerance, and hope that the world can look to with respect. Meanwhile, Mel Lastman.
That's Lisa Simpson.
Yeah,
that's Lisa Simpson running for office in a city that has just been amalgamated with every Hitlerite suburb that surrounds it.
Yeah, it's a city that elected Rob Ford, basically. He used to say he campaigned like on the promise of freezing property taxes, despite Toronto, quote, downloading a lot of new costs from the amalgamation. When asked how he would do it, he simply said, look, if I try to prove it, everyone's just going to start poking holes in it and they're going to find a million different ways of proving me wrong. So I'm not going to prove it.
It checks out.
Yeah, it's an uncosted manifesto because if I costed it, people would yell at me.
Yeah. He also like denied homelessness was a problem on the same day that a homeless woman like died of cold exposure in North York. He also said, I want heavy penalties for young people. I don't care if they're age 10. I want to see young offenders penalized. I don't want to see them walking the streets. I'm not talking about stealing an apple. I'm just talking about something that's serious crime and should be punished. So he's basically like, jail for 10-year-olds.
Well, because the thing is, they're selling that furniture way too cheap.
Yeah. Look, they're selling pickles for 3 cents.
If you don't intervene on the pickle sellers now, by the time they grow up, they'll be selling like sofas and beds and stuff.
Yeah, I know because of my lived experience. No, I like when he's like, I'm going to feed hungry children. Some of them. The other ones I'm going to put in prison.
Susan Hall said she wanted to feed hungry children.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, no, Mel Lastman said he wanted to shovel the driveways.
That makes more sense. Yeah. A child in every driveway.
He's also feeding children by putting them in prison in that they have food in prison.
He admitted that his policy of jailing 10-year-olds was a mistake, saying, quote, I was thrown. A 10-year-old is a little young, but a 12-year-old knows a little better, and maybe something should be done about them.
When I was 12, I knew the price of a chair.
Just turning the big dial back and forth. Yeah.
And again, he's like, also came up with this idea to freeze property taxes for 10 years, improvising talking at a senior citizen's home in Etobicoke. He just made it up. He's like, I don't know, 10 years, why not? Anyway, Lastman wins the election, and he carries Etobicoke, North York, and Scarborough, with Hall winning East York, Toronto, and York. This is the exact Rob Ford divide.
I was going to say, wasn't this whole thing with Rob Ford only won because of all those suburbs that had been added?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's one of the main reasons the Conservatives wanted to amalgamate Toronto, is they wanted to eliminate this quite like progressive city. Mm. Guess what? They did. They succeeded.
Hey, good job. Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
so one more video now. The vibe of Blastman's mayoralty. Is just open up that little video right there.
Oh, yeah. Hold on one second. There's a, I'm having an issue with my, there's a cat on my desk and I, okay.
Aww.
Oh, this is Cronenberg directed this?
Okay. Oh God, I hate this guy already. Okay.
Yeah. Cause he's a huckster, right?
Yeah. This is huckster stuff. Mel wants you.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Mayor Mel and you're on the air. Phone, fax, or email. I want to hear what you have to say. Questions, comments, kudos, whatever.
So he and his deputy mayor, Case Utz, then basically run the city. But the funny thing is, a lot of what they do, a lot of what they spend their political capital on, is trying to screw with the mayor's lifelong enemy.
Well,
let's fucking go. Also, can we circle back to Case Utz?
Yep, Case Utz.
Case Utz?
Or as you'd pronounce him in America, Case Outs. Thank you.
Boo!
So, literally, these two guys, since they have known each other, they have been in municipal government in North York and then Toronto for exactly the same amount of time, and they have hated each other like they are each other's mortal enemies. They hate each other. There's a guy called...
Please tell me about his nemesis.
So, this is a guy called Councillor Howard Mosco. So Howard Mosco, yeah, started hating him in North York and stayed hating him for the rest of both of their lives. Lastman spends a huge amount of time as his first term as amalgamated Toronto mayor, trying and failing to get this guy fired as TTC commissioner, Toronto Transit commissioner. Mosco is also the son of Jewish immigrants, but was often the only left-wing voice in North York Council. He was an anti-apartheid activist, a teacher, a union firebrand, a fierce supporter of LGBTQ rights at a time when ridiculously conservative Toronto was banning even like mentioning homosexuality on subway advertising.
Well, I mean, that's the kids might find out that they're gay from subway advertising, which is maybe the funniest way to have it happen.
So he was also very gaffe prone. He was like an exact reverse Nega Lastman, essentially.
He had a Wario?
Yes. Although I think Mel Lastman is Howard Mosco's Wario.
One of you has to change your name to Firstman, to make this work.
The Globe and Mail, Canada's New York Times, called him Mr. Dress-Up, which is our version of Mr. Rogers, is called Mr. Dress-Up. In 2007, don't worry about it.
What?
Fake country.
That sounds like a new slur for trans men.
Mr. Dress-Up over there.
Sorry, I'm looking at what Mr. Dress-Up looks like because I'm really going to be surprised, I'm sure.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so he's wearing, he looks like, what's that Marvel guy that's got like the four quadrants? Morpho or whatever? That's what he looks like. Yeah. I hate this. I hate Mr. Dress Up.
You hate Mr. Dress? No, Mr. Dress Up's good. No, sorry. I won't stand for this Mr. Dress Up slander.
Show me computer. Show me Mr. Dress Up. What the fuck?
Yeah, I don't like this.
He looks like he's in the fucking like 2CB marching band. Why? What? Oh, I don't care for any of this at all. This is clownish to me.
This looks like somebody making fun of Canada by being like, do you know Canada has their own Mr. Rogers called Mr. Dress Up? And he's wearing big overalls.
This is the head of like a kind of like mid-ranking communist party official in the Soviet Union that has been grafted onto some kind of like children's entertainer.
Okay, look, Mr. Dress Up he's good, all right? Let's not like start talking about Mr. Dress Up in any bad ways.
There's something Fed related about Mr. Dress Up. There's one here where he's got like a jacket with too many arms on it, but he looks uncannily like George Smiley in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Yeah.
And he just, but if George Smiley had like three or four more arms.
Yeah. Yeah, guys, I have bad news.
Uh-huh. He also has a haunted
I was going to say, I have awful news. The NKVD has killed Mr. Dress Up for advocating for reform.
Yeah.
Comrade Dress Up.
Smiley, we knew that your weakness was your puppet wife, Anne. You'd never be able to see me.
Well, it's about him learning to like lose that and eventually becoming the same as his nemesis, you know, Mr. Dress
Maybe
Down.
Mr. Rogers is his Carla. So it was his, basically, Mr. So he had to wear costumes. That's what they called him, Mr. Dress Up.
Okay.
But is to his decision to delegate the costume wearing that in part caused a city councilor to resign from the TTC Pizzazz Committee in 2006 that he formed because Mr. Mosco requested that the councilor.
I'm sorry.
Sorry.
The Pizzazz Committee?
The Pizzazz Committee?
Sorry.
The Pizzazz Committee.
Your subway doesn't have. Does New York City subway not have a Pizzazz Committee?
I mean, we've got a Razzle Dazzle Committee. But a Pizzazz Committee sounds ridiculous to me.
Uh-huh.
No, that's, hey, what the fuck is the TTC Pizzazz Committee, please?
I mean, the chief just has the show business committee.
Like. Yeah, they have a Pizzazz Committee. It's like, out of making it fun, right? Making the subway fun. Anyway, Moscow had requested that a counselor wear a bunny costume and ride the subway.
The thing is...
Fake country.
Oh my God. The thing is that, like, Mr. Dress-Up would be such a devastating fucking insult were it not referencing an extant thing that demonstrates how fucking stupid the country that you're in is.
Okay, it's a little more Canada slander than I expected on this episode, okay?
All right. Okay, well, you can't bring up Mr. Dress-Up and Pizzazz Committee in the same paragraph.
You can't just give me Mr. Dress-Up. Okay,
so, Moscow once said of his relationship with Lastman.
Just world-weary Canadian politics insider being like, yep, looks like Mr. Dress-Up's fucking with the Pizzazz Committee again. What?
Okay, well, now when you say it like that...
We are a serious country, by the way.
But we will not be responding to the president's cease and desist letter about our ad featuring them. So, if I said a blackboard was black, Mel would say it was green. Philosophically, we're at the opposite ends of the political scale. I didn't really dislike him, but I did love toying with him.
They dissolved the Pizzazz Committee in 2006?
That's because Moscow got removed from the TTC by Lastman that year. The Pizzazz Committee was Moscow's thing.
It's like this bunny suit shit is the last straw.
Yeah, and the thing is, Moscow. No, I'm gonna tell the whole story. So their hatred of one another started as something of an accident because local reporters of like North York Daily News would need some filler. Lastman and Moscow would just like trade barbs to make headlines. Moscow once said, I told Mel one day, you made me famous. When are you going to make me rich? But Moscow also basically existed trying to fuck with Mel as much as possible all the time. For example, Lastman, because he was a North York councilor and Lastman was North York mayor. Lastman was part of a drive to have a magazine called Now removed from North York City Hall because there were ads for sex workers in the back of the paper. During one council meeting, Lastman would marvel at the various sex acts advertised in the paper. He'd like be like, blowjob? And stuff like this. Lastman then went on vacation and Moscow was deputy mayor for 1 week. And at that time, he presented the Now magazine co-founders, Michael Hollett and Alice Klein, with an award formally recognizing the paper's contribution to journalism from the government of North York.
That rules.
He also said, but he also like didn't just fuck with him in fun ways. He also was like, hey, you're trying to publicly fund a performing arts center, but like that what's happening is this one guy is going to get really rich off of it and so on and so on. But my favorite one is that Howard Moscow's wife bought Mel Lastman's toupee at a charity auction, and then Moscow would bring the hairpiece to North York Council with him and just pretend to dust stuff with it in front of Mel Lastman.
Full spectrum Canadian psychological warfare. Just all your ventures, everything you have ever done, every breath that you take is going to be opposed by me in a way that is both theatrical and attempts to exemplify pizzazz.
Yeah, this is, they remind me of like the last two Jewish guys in Kabul who were like, we built different synagogues because we hate each other. We exist to squabble. So anyway, he also, Moscow, weirdly, led the charge to rename a major square in North York as Mel Lastman Square when he was still alive, and was mayor. However, it was then revealed...
Well, he was trying to land at I Sure Hope He Is.
Well, it was even more elaborate than that. He was hoping that it would make Mel seem like an old hat who'd already been commemorated and pressure him into retiring.
That's a deep level of hatred. I'm very here for that.
He also followed Lastman to the Amalgamated City Hall.
Why is Moscow trying to get it renamed to Mel Lastman Memorial Square?
Oh, he would have called it that if he thought he could get away with it, to be clear. He hated this guy. So he also, when Lastman became mayor of Toronto, Moscow stayed as a councillor in Amalgamated Toronto, where he continued to hate him. Lastman did everything he could to try to get Moscow removed from that post as a TTC commissioner, where he would like had the pizzazz committee, and Moscow never stopped in his taunting of Lastman for the council chamber. But remember I said firing Moscow was a big focus of Mel's first term. He finally did it, but he could only do it after the 2000 election because Moscow was so well liked. He replaced it with a guy called Brian Ashton, but Ashton wasn't as pliable as Mel would have wanted, so we got rid of him and replaced him with a lady called Linda DeZero, who quit to become a garbage lobbyist. And then Moscow was just next in line.
That's not fair. I'm sure she's a fine lobbyist.
Yeah, but Moscow was just next in line and then was spot welded into place the rest of Lastman's term as mayor. So he like got rid of him for like 6 months.
Comes back?
Yeah, he just
Moscow's
comes back.
Boomerang?
So
wait, going back to Mr. Dress Up and George Smiley, it's Moscow rules.
Yeah, so after Lastman's death, Moscow said, you know, I didn't actually dislike Mel as a person, but I didn't have a lot of sympathy for him either. He was sort of a precursor to Rob Ford, Donald Trump. He was the outrageous, larger than life, but I think he did what he could within his limitations. So the moment Mel Lastman dies, Howard Moscow is like, hey, it's fine, I guess.
Laying down my decades old feud instantly and with a disconcerting amount of ease and just being like, yeah, you know.
Yeah, it was fine. I did what he could. Like, this, to me, this is my favorite part of the whole story is that there are two mortal municipal enemies.
It's like, I hated him while he was alive, and then when he was strict atheist nemesis who doesn't like come to your funeral after you die, is just like stops being your nemesis because it's like, oh yeah, doesn't exist anymore, not my problem.
I will waste no more energy on hating you from beyond the grave. I'm just gonna go about my day advocating for like progressive policies in Toronto. Moscow's still alive.
And a salute to him, you know.
Oh, a hearty salute to Howard Moscow. So what were Mel Lastman's concerns? He was a lot like Rob Ford, really. He was not to slash taxes, hire cops, jail 12-year-olds. Like, it was standard stuff. Didn't want to do anything particularly unusual, except for, like, devote all the power of the mayoral office to fucking with one man that he couldn't really do.
Listen, if you're going to take a guy like Mel, who does seem like he is maybe a little bit evil deep down, if you're going to get one guy to be sort of the sin eater for all of his evil to be focused on, it's not a bad way to get him to leave the city alone.
Jimmy
right?
Kimmel.
As you sort
Jimmy
of deploy
Kimmel,
one
you will
nemesis.
Be reincarnated as a lotus flower.
So, there were also a few funny gaffes. Like, there's some funny gaffes, some sort of quite, you know, again, this is a really racist guy gaffes. One of the funny ones was there was like a blizzard into January 1999 in Toronto that like just melted basically immediately. But before it did, Mel Lastman called the army in and soldiers and tanks rolled into Toronto to rescue everyone from the snowbanks, but the snow just melted. And so they were like standing around saying, what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah, they should have sent the Army Pizzazz Committee.
Which I assume the Canadian forces have.
Yeah, the whole, it's
yeah,
all,
a guy,
it's all Pizzazz Committee.
Costume. Yeah.
Yeah. So he also, again,
reaching for an unusually specific insult against the Canadian Grenadier Guards and being like, oh, you mean the Canadian Forces Pizzazz Committee?
That's so specific.
This is going to lead to me getting in a fight on the Canada tour where like some like Guards veteran like full force breaks my nose or something.
Yeah, it says here, ma'am, on Twitter, you called the RCMP Mr. Dress-Up?
Yeah, getting banned from Canada, but it's like I'm banned from all of North America for different reasons. The Mexican Navy want to kill me because of a Well, There's Your Problem episode. Donald Trump wants to send me to El Salvador, and the Canadian Border Force want to like deport me back to the UK because of my Mr. Dress-Up bits.
You're allowed in like Saint-Pierre and Miquelon, and that's it. In 2001, prior to leaving for Kenya to gain support for Toronto's Olympics bid, Lastman said, I don't want to go to a place like Mombasa. I just see myself in a pot of boiling water with natives dancing around me holding spears.
Oh, ooh, kill this guy. Oh.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
Boy. Yeah. Also, he had an affair that produced several children. In 1974.
He cheated on the wife who, like, quit her job for him back in the day?
Yeah, and called him a little schnook. Yeah, unfortunately.
And said he was a bad husband?
What a piece of shit.
Yeah, he fathered two sons with her, Todd and Kim. During a 14-year-long affair, she worked at Bad Boy. But also, his wife was, there was another controversy around his wife. His wife, very rich, very, like, fabulous, very glitzy. In 1999, she loved shoplifting. Like, she was addicted to shoplifting.
Go boss.
Yeah. Okay, go, yeah. Shoplifting.
She's so real for that.
Shoplifting rocks, and I wish I could still do it.
If you see an obscenely rich woman shoplifting, no, you didn't.
So, this is from, yeah, she's dealing with ennui, okay? She's just trying to feel something. So, this is from a 1999 edition of Toronto Life. I'm quoting. These same media outlets heard that millionaire Marilyn Lastman was caught stealing a $155 pair of designer pants at an Eaton store. No charges were laid. Guess who ran the story? Nobody, to quote Lastman's well-known furniture chain advertisement. Is there a double standard at work here? You bet there is. The story only came out because Mel Lastman threatened to kill and or have fired local CBC reporter Adam Vaughn when he was accused of leaking an oblique story on the shoplifting incident to Frank magazine.
That covers a lot of ground to be like, I'll get you fired or killed.
Whichever is more convenient.
I'm going to broadly change your personal circumstances in life.
Are you ready for a change between 0 and 100%? All right, you lucky.
You're going to have to change your Facebook status to dead
or unemployed. Either one.
Works at not being alive anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to be at City Hall filing a certificate of death for yourself or getting unemployment. And I'm going to figure it out on your way down there. But one of those, you have to go.
All right. They call me Johnny Percentages. I'm going to roll this 100-sided dice and it's going to see how much your life changes based on my input. All right. I rolled a 5. Give me your shoe.
Hold on. Let me look at my sheet that says each number. You're lucky this wasn't a 6 because that's both shoes.
If I roll a 1, you get a little kiss on the cheek. It could be unnerving.
It's a lot of work making up those actuarial tables.
Yeah. Well, it's a good DM puts in the work ahead of time for Johnny Percentages.
Yeah. It's 1999. I had to do this on graph paper.
Yeah. Look, you seen the movie Look, you seen the movie No Country for Old Men. I just think that there could be more than two outcomes to our interaction right here. It's not really a coin flip for me. I'm like Anton
Chigurh.
What's the
most you ever lost on a D20 roll?
Ah, yes. But I don't know what skill check I'm making.
You don't know.
Don't write it down. Don't write it down on your character sheet. Then it just becomes another gold piece.
Oh God, I could. D&D Anton Chigurh should really. Oh.
Oh God!
No, no.
This is of all the podcasts I do, I expected to spin off into another D&D podcast. It wasn't this one, but I'm ready for it. I'm ready for that arc to happen.
I'm so ready for municipal D&D, and one of the characters encountered by the party is Johnny Percentages. Okay, all right, we're back.
Well, that's the trailer if I ever get back to cussing those.
Yeah, so, the Toronto Star went with this angle reporting on the theft. The mayor has been under personal strain since his wife Marilyn was apprehended in a Vaughan mall and arrested over stealing a pair of designer pants. So it was very hard for the mayor when his wife stole the pants, which is why he threatened to kill that guy or have him fired.
Or have him...
or take one of his shoes. Give me a shoe. also when SARS was happening in Canada, he was like, what's the World Health Organization? What's SARS? I don't really care. But he won re-election in 2000 by like 80%. But then the proper scandals actually begin. Then Toronto amalgamated. It started leasing a lot of computers, including from a company called MFP. The treasurer, by the way, at the time was a woman called Wanda Leitzik, who was a North York Lastman person. Over the duration of this agreement, the city paid like double, like 85 rather than 40 million to this company, computer leasing company.
Hey, he's buying computers for $2 Canadian instead of one.
Yeah, that's right. It's all a publicity stunt. And it's like he wasn't really involved in this, but like it was corruption that was in his city hall. Because it turned out that there was a whole like inquiry into it that one of the salespeople at MFP, a man called Dash Domi, you can laugh at his name. It's ridiculous.
Is he related to Ty Domi?
He is. It's his brother.
Oh, good. Uh-huh. Ty Domi, famous hockey maniac.
Yeah, a goon. Canada's best goon.
Like a true goon, like a guy that is who could not skate or do anything with a stick. All he did was punch people in the head, including am I inventing one time he did it to someone in the stands?
No, you're not inventing that. Okay. That happened. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I think he also he used to try to deniably hit the refs as much as he could.
Well, critical support for that because refs are cops.
No gods, no mayors, no refs.
Huh?
So, yeah, so Dash Domi is the older brother of Ty Domi, hockey's foremost goon. And he received like millions of dollars of kickbacks for securing this computer lease. Much of the testimony presented to the inquiry also alleged an improper financial relationship between Domi and a guy called Tom Jakubek, who was the city's budget chief at the time of the contracts. Basically, they found that MFP paid Jakubek to attend like Leafs games in Philly and go flying private jets and all this stuff.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Wait a second. So I'm reading Ty Domi's Wikipedia page and learning about the incident in which he like hit the fan. Sitting in the penalty box, Domi used his water bottle to spray at a heckler, prompting another fan to begin yelling at him and climbing up the glass. The glass panel gave way and the fan fell into the penalty box. Domi then grabbed him and punched him several times. After the game, in an interview, Domi said to the media, "It's nice to see the fans get involved."
Yeah, oh, he's a fucking maniac. I don't know if this is true. I think he still to this day holds the record for the most fights ever had in a hockey game.
Yeah, that sounds right.
333 of them.
That's like across his career as well. I think he holds both records, most fights in an individual game and most fights overall. Like he's winning everything. He's like one of these like runners that just like is perfect at 100, perfect at 200, perfect at 500, amazing at 800, wins the marathon, sweeps it in terms of being a fucking goon.
Beautiful.
So basically MFP, this MFP guy, Dash Domi, he withdraws $25,000 from his bank account and then phones Tom Jakubek, and then both of them are seen going into the same city hall parking garage for 13 minutes. And 2 days later, Jakubek pays $21,000 on a family vacation to Disneyland. Dash and Ty Domi both testified that this was just a birthday, that the withdrawal that Dash made was not a bribe for Tom Jakubek, but a birthday gift for Ty. And you know what? I would believe that you would want to give a generous birthday gift to Ty Domi. Otherwise, he might start punching you. Now, Jakubek said, no, the payment on my credit card for the vacation came from my father-in-law, who is also a Toronto councillor called Ken Morish. Anyway, also at the same time, in a separate affair, Wanda Leitzik, who I mentioned earlier, was like improperly awarded millions of dollars in contracts, different scandal, to an American software developer she was sleeping with. Like, all of this stuff was all happening.
This woman's having a great time. Like, and it all comes from going on the computer, you know?
Well,
everything's computer.
So this weirdly, this led to the huge raft of ethics legislation getting passed in Toronto that is like in municipal Toronto, which is one of the reasons why like all of Rob Ford's abuses of power were so weirdly small time, like using a bus to move his hockey team around or like using city letterhead to solicit donations. Like ethics rules really tightened up after this, which is why it was so weird. Lastman's health rapidly deteriorated due to Hep C he contracted from tainted blood transfusion in the 80s, plus cancer.
Ooh,
he resigned the mayoralty in the early 2003, still very popular, not as popular as he used to be because of the scandals. He died in 2021. He gave few interviews other than to reconfirm that he loved his wife, but he should have left politics sooner. Bad Boy went bankrupt for the final time, having gone bankrupt several times in its existence. In 2024, Howard Mosco remains alive.
Maybe they should have sold the furniture for more than they were selling it for.
Yeah, well, maybe. Although, to be fair, they got like 70 years out of it.
Yeah.
Mm.
He finally, the prophecy that he would become a memorial square finally happened.
All right. 70
years, a bad boy.
That is my second hometown hero. That is Mel Lastman. What do you think?
I think he's cool as hell.
This has been beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah.
I gotta be honest, I was one shot by Johnny Percentages, and I will be thinking about Johnny Percentages for the rest of the day.
That is all I can think about.
Well, hey, you out there, if you have 100-sided dice, roll it and then allow it to impact your life by that much. Otherwise,
you've invented the I Ching.
Yeah, of course. but in the form of a kind of a mobster who I'm imagining is Johnny Tightlips, just so you know. When he's in my head, he's Johnny Tightlips.
The Italian-American I Ching, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think what I would say to you, Riley, is that you've been rolling it your whole life, and you just didn't know it.
God damn it. Anyway, I want to thank, of course...
I really thought it was going to be Mr. Dress-Up, but in fact, it's Johnny Percentages.
I want to thank my co-hosts in the municipality, my co-mayors, my alderwomen, for as always, another wonderful episode of this beautiful, odd, strange kind of racist man.
Yeah.
And also, this is a free episode.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a bonus. Who's mayor next?
I believe that's November.
Is that my decision? My God.
It's your decision. So well, it's the Mayor Tankulus' decision.
Between two and three. No. Well, so what the Mayor Tankulus has guided me to is between two and three relatively anonymous mayors of Denver in order to tell a story about another guy. So please subscribe to the Patreon for that, because I promise it's worth it. Trust me on this one. Trust me with your $5 a month.
That's right.
NoGodsNoMayors.com.
NoGodsNoMayors.com. Check it out.
Are saying. And let me ask you something, listener. If the rules of 5e... brought you to this. Of what use was the rule?
All right. Okay. Love you all. Bye. Bye.
Bye. Bye.